It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you for tuning in, as you do every single Tuesday afternoon or on podcast, however you listen to this, because we're live every Tuesday from 5 to 6 here on Joy 620, and then also have it on podcast. You can get our podcast on iTunes, or you can go to our website, investinghope.com, click on blog, and then click on podcast, and there it is. You can go all the way back to last year. I think September is when we started the podcast. And so, either listen live, or maybe you can't catch the whole show live, then you can certainly get the podcast while you're out mowing the yard. You can listen to it, or while you're eating dinner. That's probably not the way to do it, but however you want to listen to it, you can do it. And we certainly would appreciate that, as we every single week talk about life. We talk about hope. We talk about things that are going on. And so what I want to do today is we're going to kind of bounce around a couple of places. First off, I want to thank publicly Shoreline Church. This past Sunday, I was able to join the pastor, Jason Hayes of Shoreline, and kind of co-teach as we talked about abortion. And what Shoreline is doing over the next, it's really like a 5-week, 6-week series that they're covering. The series is called Headlines, and they're covering issues that are filling up the headlines. So issues that we see in the newspaper, issues that we see on Twitter, issues that we see or hear about in podcasts or on the news, all the issues. And so they started with terrorism, and then the next week they went to sexuality, and then this past week they dealt with the issue of abortion. And Jason Hayes was nice enough to reach out to me, and we connected, and we talked about the message, and I think it went well, and it was handled well. And so if you're a pastor out there listening, you know, and you're wondering, how can we deal with abortion in life from the pulpit? How can we deal with that in our congregation? How can we deal with that as the local church? You know, some of you may be thinking, well, it's more of a political issue. I don't really want to talk about it from the pulpit. Well, I would love to sit down with you and have that conversation. It's not just a political issue. It is certainly a gospel issue. And so I would recommend going on our Facebook page, and you can find us, Investing Hope, and you can watch that sermon from Shoreline, that message from Shoreline, and maybe you want to partner with us in that. I'd love to do that and at least sit down with you and talk about life and talk about hope and how we as believers need to change the narrative, how we as believers need to engage with our culture and with our society and do that. So I would love to take some time to do that with you. Right now, what I want to do is read an article, maybe not read all of it, but bits and pieces of it, about what is going on around our world. So on here and other places, I have said often that if we devalue life at its beginning stage via abortion, and if we devalue life at the end stage, you know, via doctor-assisted suicide, euthanasia because of a terminal illness, or because someone is just tired of living, or whatever that looks like, then ultimately we are devaluing life at every stage, right? So again, and what I've talked about before is when we do that, then we cannot be surprised. We cannot be surprised when people go out and try to kill other people, because we have, as a society and as a culture, said that life doesn't have value. And so what we have to do to answer that is we have to stand for life. You know, and when pro-lifers talk about pro-life, it isn't just the baby. It isn't just dealing with abortion and pregnancy. Now, that's certainly a big part of what we stand for. But if we are going to claim to be pro-life, then we also have to stand in opposition to euthanasia and doctor-assisted suicide. Now, some people would say, well, that's crazy. That's not going to happen. Well, it's happening. It's happening in our country. And it's happening around the world. And now it's not only happening with adults. So some would say, well, any and every adult has the right to say it is time for their life to be ended, right? So if there is an adult with terminal illness, if there is an adult with cancer or heart disease or something that is terminal, and their time has been limited by the doctors, and they've been told, hey, you have a month, or you have 6 months, or you maybe have a year, then a lot of folks would say, well, they're an adult, they can make adult decisions, and if they choose so, they can take drugs or have a doctor help them in their life. So a lot of people would say that. I disagree with that, but a lot of people would say that. Well, now what we're seeing is in Belgium, this isn't just adults. As the first child, the first minor has been euthanized. So listen to this article. The first child has died under a new law in Belgium allowing doctors to euthanize children. In 2014, Belgium voted to extend euthanasia to children with disabilities. In a move, now listen to that. That doesn't say a terminal illness. That says extend euthanasia to children with disabilities. In a move pro-life advocates worldwide had been fearing would come and expand an already much abused euthanasia law even further. The law allows minors to seek euthanasia under certain conditions, and the measure also would extend the right to request euthanasia to adults with dementia. No age limit would be set, but the children who are euthanized would have to, quote, possess the capacity of discernment. Euthanasia has been legal in Belgium since 2002, but has since its enactment been prohibited for patients under 18. While euthanasia is legal in a handful of countries in Europe, Belgium is the first country in the world to lift all age restrictions on the practice. A professor said, issued a statement confirming that the first physician-induced death of a minor was reported to the committee by a doctor last week. Few details were released about the child's condition, but here's what they said. A terminally ill minor has been helped to die in Belgium for the first time since the country did away with age restrictions on euthanasia 2 years ago, according to the senator who wrote the law. And this senator confirmed the death of a sick juvenile to the Associated Press Saturday. He said the minor was from Belgium's Flemish region, but declined to provide any further detail about the patient to protect the privacy of the grieving family. I mean, listen to this, folks. Some have questioned, the article goes further, some have questioned whether children should be allowed to make the choice between life and death. In 2014, a group of doctors, including pediatricians, signed a group letter to voice opposition to the measure. So that is what we have going on around the world. Now, one would say, many would say, well, no one wants kids to die. No one wants to see that. Adults can make decisions with their life, but kids, they can't make these decisions. But now what we're seeing in Belgium is it's happened. So a minor has died with the help of a doctor, with the help of a physician. And folks, if you think this is going to stay there, you're mistaken. This is going to be an issue that we are going to see a lot more often. And so if we're going to claim to be pro-life, if we're going to claim to stand for life, it's. I told the congregation this Sunday, I said, many of us that have pro-life bumper stickers on our cars really should change those to say pro-baby, because a lot of us, that's really all that matters to us, is that if that mom would just have that baby. Now, we should certainly celebrate life, and we should certainly encourage pregnancy, and we should encourage folks to parent their children and not have abortions. But it isn't just about baby. It is about baby, and it is about mom. It's about both of them. They both matter. They both have value. But our pro-life stance can't even stop there. It must then go further and say that doctors didn't take an oath, or doctors, the oath that doctors took should not allow them to euthanize patients. Now, should people be made comfortable? Sure. But when we get to a point where we're allowing kids to decide whether they live or die, and we're extending legislation to say that those with special needs, could be euthanized. Right now, that may be the choice of a person and that individual, but what happens when it goes further than that? And then we have people saying, well, they don't really know what they want, but we know what they want, and what they want is to be euthanized. So then we're going to have people trying to step in and make decisions for these people. Well, they have special needs. They can't make this decision. We're going to make it for them. Well, they have dementia. They can't make this decision. We're going to make it for them. Well, they have lived a good life. They can't make this decision. We're going to make it for them. Well, it's really rough trying to take care of this minor with all of their special needs. So I know ultimately this is what they would want. These are things and these are conversations and these are arguments that are going to be made. So how do we respond as believers? How do we respond as pro-lifers? How do we engage in a culture that is saying some lives have value, others don't? It really doesn't matter. It's all about a choice. And even if they would choose otherwise, we may even be able to make that choice for them. So what do? How do we respond? First off, we have to engage. Now, I could read that article in an article that I'm going to read here in a little bit about abortion. I could read those things and I could seek to engage in a hateful, angry and bitter way. I could do that, but that wouldn't do any good. It might make me feel better for a second. It might allow me to vent. It might allow me to push an agenda. But what does it do? Nothing. So when we read these things, first off, it should break our heart. When I read that article, my heart breaks. My heart breaks that we're at a point as a society in our world, globally, where someone actually writes a piece of legislation that says minors can decide if they could be euthanized or not. That's insane. We've reached a crazy, crazy place. So that breaks my heart. But the answer isn't anger. The answer isn't bitterness. The answer is, okay, let's engage in conversations with them. So then what we have to do is we have to seek to have meetings with those folks. So for instance, if that legislation was to happen here in our town, in Knoxville, or in the state of Tennessee, or in our country, then we better be reaching out to that person writing that legislation, having a conversation, not hateful, but saying, here's why we disagree with that. Here's why we are pro-life. From a biblical standpoint and from a secular standpoint, here's why life has value. Here's why life matters. Here's why we stand. Here's why we open places like Hope Resource Center. Here's why we seek to serve. Here's why churches are seeking to serve the most vulnerable and those with special needs. Here's why places like Dollywood are opening up places for autistic children within their park so that all people can enjoy what they have there. Because they're thinking outside of the box and they're saying that everybody that walks in this park has value. Oh, that we would say everybody that walks the face of this planet has value. Whether they have special needs, whatever race they are, it does not matter. What matters is they were made in the image of God. And so if we can't grasp that truth, and if we only seek to answer their legislation and their agenda with anger and hate, well, then we lose every time. And we're going to talk more when we come back. Back. This is Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for listening. So the first part of the show, we discussed euthanasia and why being pro-life and in terms of what we stand for in life. And when you think of Hope Resource Center, you usually think, well, you know, they're fighting abortion. They're working with moms and dads in crisis. They're, you know, we think of life at the earliest stage. That is what Hope Resource Center is for, and it certainly is. But when we think about our stance, when we think about who we are as a pro-life people, who we are as Christians who say life has value, then that must also include a stance against euthanasia, a stance against doctor-assisted suicide. Because what that does is that devalues life. And it's also a slippery slope to a place that we certainly do not want to be. And if you're thinking, well, this will never happen in America, why are you even bringing it up? We don't have to worry about that. We're America. We're the greatest country on the planet. Well, I'll just let you in on a secret. Did you know that America is one of seven countries on the planet that allow elective abortions after 20 weeks? Do you know that puts us in company with China and North Korea? So although we may be the greatest country on the planet in a lot of areas, when it comes to the celebration of life, when it comes to standing for life, we there's a lot to be wished and hoped for. Okay, so the next story that I want to focus on is an abortion facility that's opening up in Oklahoma City. Excuse me. So Oklahoma City, there's an abortion clinic that is opening up. And the owner, this is what the owner has said. They hope to perform. Now listen, just think about this. Okay, used to the narrative and the messaging of the abortion lobby was safe, legal, and rare, right? So what does rare mean? Very seldom. Rare means not going to happen often. You know, we really don't want it to happen that much, but when it does happen, we want it to be safe and legal. But we do want these to happen on very, very rare occasions. Well, that narrative didn't match the numbers. So we've been seeing a million abortions every single year. That's not necessarily rare. We have 4 million births every year, right? So 4 million births every year and 1 million abortions every year, 60 million since 1973. So it hasn't been rare, but that has been their mantra, safe, legal, rare. Now listen to this owner of the abortion clinic and what they're saying. Let me know if this sounds like they're pushing for rare or not. The owner said they hope to perform 1,500 abortions during the first year of business, an increase to 3,000 abortions a year within the next few years. So they're go ahead and they're putting a model together. They're making plans, budget plans, and casting vision and business plans based on how many abortions they want to do in the first year and how many they want that to increase to in the years to come. Her new abortion facility, Trust Women Southwind Women's Center, began seeing patients last week. It is the first abortion business to open in the city in 40 years. And then listen, she says this: if you look at this part of the country, there is a lack of access to reproductive health care. Again, that's code word. When they don't want to use the term abortion, so they want to say reproductive health care. And frankly, she says, a lack of health care across the board. While the facility offers OBGYN care, which is good, birth control and adoption information, which that adoption information is good, its main focus appears to be abortions. Because if she is able to meet her abortion goals, her new facility would increase. Listen to this. If she is able to meet her abortion goals at 1,500 in the first year and then 3,000, in the years after, that facility alone will increase Oklahoma's abortion rate by more than 50%. On average, about 5,600 unborn babies have lost their lives to abortion every year in Oklahoma during the past decade. Though the numbers have been decreasing in the past few years, if they are able to find the success that they want to find, they will increase that number by 50%. This abortion business is offering later-term abortions as well. The facility will do abortions up to 21.6 weeks, a point very near viability when strong medical evidence indicates that unborn babies feel pain. Think about that. So they're going to not only do abortions, they're going to do abortions up to 21 weeks. That means you already know the gender of the child. And they're going to do abortions at that place. Again, that puts us with North Korea and China. Remember that. In Vietnam, allowing elective abortions after 20 weeks. Now, you may say, well, what's an elective abortion? What's that mean? That means for any reason. So you may be sitting there going, well, for life of the mom or for rape or for incest. Well, yeah, for those, but also for gender. Maybe I wanted a boy and I'm getting a girl, and so we're going to abort and try this again. Maybe I had a night out on the town and my partner is not the color or the race that I would prefer, so I'm going to abort this child. Folks, that happens. Maybe, well, we think this child may have special needs, so I'm going to have an abortion. For any reason, maybe, you know what, our family is big enough, and it doesn't need to be any bigger. So out of convenience. 2 years ago, Oklahoma City's last abortion facility closed, making it the largest metro in America to have zero abortion facilities. Last week, that changed when this clinic opened. Her abortion facilities have poor reputations for patient care and safety. She also runs an abortion facility in Kansas. And here's what Cheryl Sullinger, a leader of Operation Rescue, described about this owner of this clinic. Burkhart is a militant pro-abortion advocate activist who once worked for the notorious late-term abortionist George Tiller as head of his now defunct political action committee. So again, the goal here isn't reproductive health care, okay? The goal here is not to to make sure that women are being loved and served and cared for. That's not the goal. The goal is to increase abortions. So what this person has done is this person has said, okay, Oklahoma City, one of the largest metropolitan areas in the country, without an abortion facility. And then this owner saw dollar signs. Not, ooh, there's some women that I could help. Free. Now, let's not get crazy. You know, I always find it funny. They want to call pro-lifers extremists. They want to call us backwoods. They want to call us a lot of different names. And you know, a people that hates people that are different. Well, guess what? We're serving all kinds of people from all the nations. Transgendered, homosexual, heterosexual, anywhere in between. And you know what we're charging them? Nothing. Now, they're not paying anything. You see, so Hope wasn't open in 1997 because someone saw dollar signs. Hope wasn't open in 1997 because some business person said, man, there's an opportunity to make a lot of money here. Now, Hope was opened in 1997 because people said, there are men and women in crisis and struggling, and they need assistance. And we're going to provide them that assistance, and we don't care about their bank account. We don't care about their insurance status. We don't care about any of that, their ability to pay right then and there. Because why? We're not going to charge them a dime. We're just going to love them. We're going to serve them. We're going to stand with them. And they're going to know when they walk out that they have value. That's what they're going to know. You see, that is what reproductive health care is. That is loving. That is serving. That is providing a need and providing a service that matters for those most vulnerable among us. That is who we are. So we thank you for standing with us. We'll be back in a sec. And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Today we've been talking about just the value of life at every stage. So we started with looking at new legislation that has finally, I guess, reached its climax with an actual death occurring, a minor being euthanized in Belgium. So what we saw there was they lifted all age restrictions on euthanasia. And the first minor, the first child, has lost his life due to that. And then the second segment, we talked about a new abortion facility opening up in Oklahoma City. And that the goal of the owner of that clinic is to start with 1,500 abortions a year and then increase that to 3,000, so double their number in the following years, which would raise Oklahoma's rate of abortion 50%. That's what we're dealing with. Now, there's pro-life clinics like Hope in Oklahoma, in Oklahoma City, and they're going to be there to assist and to help and to stand in opposition to places that are devaluing life. But folks, this is an uphill battle. This isn't something that we can just sit back and just expect all is okay and all is well. We have to engage. We have to reach out. You know, I'm doing two interviews on Thursday, one locally, one nationally. Why? Because we have to engage and we have to reach out. And that narrative and the message that we have is not one of hate. It is not one of bitterness. It is one of saying, there's something better here. Can we not seek to help more people that are actually in the womb as well as outside of the womb? That is who we should be. And those are things that we should be doing. But what I'm afraid of is a lot of us have simply kind of eased back into the shadows because it's easier. And trust me, I know it is. I know it is. But there are lives, there are families that are being affected by us not engaging, by us not standing. You know, we've seen a number of patients already this week. Patients that, had we not been there, they would have gone to another place, probably an abortion clinic, where they would have shelled out, you know, for a pregnancy test, maybe $10. That would have then led maybe to an ultrasound for $150, $200. That then may have led to an abortion that is, you know, anywhere between $500 and $1,000. Or they come to Hope and they get that pregnancy test for no cost. They get that ultrasound for no cost. They have an opportunity to sit down for an hour, maybe an hour and a half, with a medical professional, with a nurse or a nurse practitioner, to have a discussion on what this means, to be educated on what abortion is. Not an agenda, but just to say, here's what it is. Here's what you will have to do. Because what we know is there are abortion clinics that are doing medical abortions, so via a pill, which really shouldn't happen after 9 weeks, and that's pushing it. So if you're 9 weeks pregnant, you're really teetering on medical and surgical. But what we know is there's abortion clinics that are doing medical abortions up to 14 weeks. And do you know what that means? That means they give some pills to a patient, they go home, and then the abortion happens at home. They bleed. A lot of things happen. That's what we want. No, it's not what we want. We should strive for more. We should require more. We should want more for our sisters. We should want more for our daughters. We should want more for our spouses. We should want more for our neighbors. This isn't a money grab. It shouldn't be. But that's what the abortion lobby has turned into. See, Roe v. Wade for them wasn't an opportunity. It wasn't an opportunity for freedom, and it might have started that way. The push originally might have been, hey, this is freedom. Hey, this is women's rights, and this is women's choice. But somewhere along the way, very early on, probably even before Roe v. Wade, some people looked at it and said, we have an opportunity to make a lot of money. I mean, think about it. 60 million abortions since 1973. Think about how much money, billions of dollars, have been made off of that. 3,000 abortions every single day. How much money is being made off of that? Hundreds of thousands. 1 million abortions every single year. This is a money-making machine. That's the focus. Don't let them blind you with reproductive health care and all of these things. That's not true. Are there people that work in those organizations that really want to see better care for women? Sure, I believe that. But ultimately, the goal is to make as much money as they can off of what makes the most money. And what makes the most money is abortion. You see, that's the goal. That is what they want to do. That is why places like Hope Resource Center exist. That is why we are open, is to stand in the gap. It's to assist. It's to love. It's to care. It's to serve. It's to take care of those that are in need. So in order for us to do that, we have to have events, and we have to do programming, and we have to raise money. Why? Because we are a nonprofit. And because we don't charge a dime to the government, we don't charge a dime to our patients. So roughly $550,000 worth of services every single year at no charge to the patient. Close to 50 baby showers every single year at no charge to the patient. Think about that. That is what we're doing. That is why we're having a golf tournament on September 26th, next Monday, to raise money to Stand for Life. Every dollar that is raised is going to go to help serve this community. That is why I reach out to organizations in the community and businesses in the community and churches in the community and individuals in the community to lock arms and say, how can we make our community better? I reached out to a nonprofit today. The nonprofit has nothing to do, I guess, on the surface or in their mission statement with the abortion issue or the life issue, so to say. But the work that they're doing matters to me. And the work that they're doing matters to this community. And I can also see that the people that they are serving could use the services that we provide. So my partnership with them will not be for monetary reasons. My partnership with them is going to make this community better. A partnership between our organization and their organization is going to make this community a better place. That is what we need to be doing. That is who we need to be. And people that are with that organization may or may not be believers, but I can lock arms with them. Why? Because we care deeply about this community. This is where God has placed us. And so we're locking arms. We're going to connect. We're going to see how we can help each other, how we can help those in need in our community. And so that means you can help us as well. We're always looking for volunteers to mentor our patients. We would love for you to connect with us. Go to Investing Hope, find our staff page, and send Megan Matthews an email. She'd love to get that. Megan@KnoxvilleHope.com. Reach out to us. Reach out to me, Andrew@KnoxvilleHope.com. I'd be happy to touch base with you about how we can connect, how you can stand with hope. Because these things matter. Because it is this work. It is the vehicle that God is using to see life celebrated. So that may mean playing golf. That may mean paying $175 to be in the golf tournament. It certainly could mean that. Because those funds go to serve those in our community. It may be praying, and coming up in October, we're going to have a prayer initiative where we're joining in prayer, not just for our clinic and our patients and our staff and our community, but for abortion clinics all over the country, for the largest abortion clinic in the country, Planned Parenthood, as they turn 100 years old October 16th. So what are we doing? We're going to pray for them. We're not going to go protest. We're not going to go be angry. We're not going to go be hateful. We're going to pray that God would transform their lives. We're going to pray that the leadership within that organization would be so moved by God that they would walk away from that industry. We're going to pray that abortion workers all over this country would walk away from that industry. And there's organizations that can help them with that. And then there were none with Abby Johnson and others. There's a lot of places where they can get connected. We're going to pray for them. And then we're going to end that week, October 16th, with a worship night at Shoreline. In worship and prayer for God to move in a mighty way in the life movement, in the abortion industry. Because folks, we've tried the the angry and the hateful and the bitter route. We tried that route many times since 1973. And that route doesn't win. And actually, it's not healthy for us. And I'll just be the first one to admit that's where I was for a long time. Even since working at Hope, that's where I was. But through some conviction and conversations, what we have to do is shift our focus, not in a hateful way toward the other side, but in a loving way toward our patients, toward those in need, but also toward those who are doing things that we believe are wrong and unethical. Well, let's pray for them. But let's engage. Don't disengage. Have conversations with your neighbor. Have conversations with those you go to church with, those you work with. Stand with pro-life organizations that are doing great work. This is how we make our communities better, and this is how life is celebrated. We'll be back to finish up in a sec. It's your turn to shine. For such a time as this. And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. We have just a few more minutes left. So to wrap up today's show, what we want to do is remember that if you devalue life at its earliest stage via abortion, and you devalue life at its latest stage via doctor-assisted suicide, then ultimately you have devalued life at every stage. So we have to be a people, a pro-life people that says babies in the womb matter. Mamas matter. And those at the end of stage. And if you're in Belgium, now you have to say minors with terminal illnesses, minors with handicaps, minors with special needs have value. This is not who we do have a culture of death. So how do we engage? How do we see that change? Well, we see it change by getting involved. And so there's a number of ways to do that. You can learn more about Hope Resource Center at investinghope.com. If you have a friend or family member that is struggling and needing assistance, they can go to knoxvillehope.com. And they can schedule an appointment. And we would love to assist them and help them again for free, no charge. They don't have to worry about that at all. So please send them our way. If you want to join us at the golf tournament coming up this Monday, investinghope.com/events. And then you can click on the golf tournament. You can sign up. We'd love to have you. If you want to pray with us in October or just anytime, you can learn more about that at investinghope.com as well. We have the Life Matters Prayer Initiative coming up. It's going to be an amazing opportunity for us to connect with people, not just here locally, but across the country. And we would just really appreciate your prayers for the staff at Hope and our patients, for the 2,500 plus pro-life clinics around the country. This is what we need to be doing, folks. This is how we see life celebrated. This is how we see the narrative change. This is how we see that 3,000 abortion a day number decrease, 1 million abortions a year decrease. These are the things that we have to do. We can't be silent. We can't live in the shadows. We can't just simply close our blinds to what's going on outside. We must engage. But remember, when you engage in those conversations and those discussions, we are not hateful. We are not bitter. We are not angry. We do that in a loving manner. Especially for believers, that's who we are. And these are image bearers that we're dealing with. Not just the baby in the womb, but the mom carrying that child is an image bearer. So then we deal with them and we love and we serve. That is who we are. That is what we need to do. And we would love for you to join us and help us out at Hope Resource Center. Again, investinghope.com. You can catch this show every single Tuesday night. On Joy 620 Live from 5 to 6, or if you're like, well, I'm not in the car from 5 to 6, or I don't have the opportunity to do that, I'll have this posted sometime tomorrow for a podcast. You can find it on iTunes. You can also find it on our website, investinghope.com. So plenty of opportunities for you to get involved and engage with us. So Monday, don't forget, Monday is the golf tournament at Gettys View. We would love for you to join us out there. Again, I do want to thank Shoreline Church for allowing me to join them this past Sunday to talk about life, to talk about hope, and to talk about the gospel and the things that are going on there. Just so many opportunities that we can stand for life and that we can engage the culture around us. Because, folks, that is what we have. We have an opportunity to engage and to get involved and not to slack back. Okay, so we appreciate you. We appreciate you standing with us. Learn more about us at our website. Reach out to me at andrew@knoxvillehope.com. Talk to you soon. And take my lust from this, Lord. Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just a bend. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting there. You